Welcome to the Risk and Repeat podcast, episode number 21. I'm Rob Wright, editor of Search Security, and I'm here as always, well, not always, but usually, Peter Loschen. Peter?
Hi, Rob.
How's it going?
Great. How's it going with you?
It's going okay. You know, I'm still a little under the weather. I've got an advanced persistent threat. A persistent infection that I'm on my way. I'm on the mend. We're doing a full forensics sweep, trying to eliminate all traces of the intrusion.
The virus.
Yep. So we'll be good. So, I'll be good. So I don't know why I'm referring to myself in the plural, but
advanced crypto cyber pathogen.
It's a cyber pathogen, exactly. Yeah, so Peter, big news. We talked about this, we mentioned this sort of briefly in passing last week's episode, the Yahoo breach. Now, we're recording this on a Friday, the last day of September, September 30th. This will be live sometime next week. And I mention that because who knows what's going to happen with this story as time progresses. We've already seen a number of developments, which we're going to talk about in a minute, but we wanted to sort of give a quick overview of what's gone on with the Yahoo breach, with the company itself, and some of the implications, some of the security red flags that have sort of cropped up since the breach news. So to recap the facts, just the facts, ma'am.
That we know of. Or that we think we know.
Yeah, exactly. There were a couple of reports in the media saying that Yahoo was on the verge of making a major announcement, a major catastrophic breach of user information had occurred. And yes.
Just to recap. Just because I'm throwing myself back to last week when I'm remembering all this happening. It was, if I remember correctly, it was on a Thursday morning that we started seeing these reports with quoting anonymous sources.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
On the potential, the probability or possibility that Yahoo would make a big announcement of a breach.
Yes.
And sure enough, it happened. It happened Friday. But that seems to be the timetable that they were going for. And somebody along the line must have gotten it. Got the idea that it would be good to force them to come out to make it more of a splash.
Right. There's a number of developing angles to this story involving sources, anonymous sources, people apparently on the inside at Yahoo who knew what was going on and knew about the breaches and knew that this was bad news, which we'll get to that in a minute. But going back to the basics, Yahoo announced that information with at least, this is an important distinguishing factor in this, at least 500 million user accounts were stolen, information associated with 500 million user accounts was stolen. The investigation, according to the company, has found, quote, no evidence that the state-sponsored actor is currently in Yahoo's network. So they said it was a state-sponsored actor. They said that they were working closely with law enforcement. The information involved may have, again, important language, included names, email addresses, telephone numbers, birth dates, hashed passwords, the vast majority with bcrypt, and in some cases, encrypted or unencrypted security questions and answers. Now, this is odd that they don't know. So there wasn't apparently a standard format to have all of this information encrypted with one approach, one method, bcrypt. Apparently, the majority are, but some aren't. And some questions and answers, security questions and answers, are encrypted, and some aren't. So that's an issue, that not all of that stuff was done uniformly across the entire company. So they announced this, this past week, more information comes out sort of about the attack. There's sort of a back and forth with different people about, yes, it was a state-sponsored attack, and now people are coming in, like InfoArmor, saying, no, there's evidence that because the attack was originally sort of discovered, or the breach, the results of the breach were discovered on the dark web, that this was a cybercrime thing. Although, Peter,
the guys that, or the hacker group, apparent that InfoArmor attributes it to, Group E?
Yes.
Is that right?
Okay. Yep.
All right. Apparently, those guys, or women, or whoever they are, not only do they work on their own for crime's sake, but they also freelance to governments if somebody wants to hire them. They're willing to, you know, they're in business.
Yep.
It's not a good business to be. I mean, I guess it's good business for them to be in, but it's not good for everybody else in the world. So yeah, and I also want to make note, because
yes.
Did we not over the summer hear about a separate 200 million user breach of some sort that was purported to be going on, which again, the latest news maybe says that perhaps that wasn't actually 200 million accounts and it wasn't a real breach, or it was a
there was some chatter about that. I don't think the company ever confirmed it.
They did not, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And that data dump was available. You could buy it for 3 Bitcoin.
3 Bitcoin, really? And we didn't bid on it?
No, it's just, you know, go on the dark website and give them 3 Bitcoin. They'd send you, I presume, a zip archive of some sort with 200 million records of dubious quality and and provenance.
Sure.
But, yeah, so there's a lot. There's a ton going on, and we haven't even gotten to the latest, have we? Or have we?
No. There's more that we need to cover, sort of late developing stuff on this breach. But I think we should put this in context, Peter, because there have been a number of other breaches of major companies that, like LinkedIn, Dropbox, that date back to, this didn't just happen. The company's, Yahoo's network was breached in 2014. That's when the initial breach occurred.
Right.
And that's according to the company and all the experts involved that know what's sort of going on within Yahoo. Now, the same sort of thing happened with LinkedIn and I believe Dropbox as well. Dropbox, that breach, I mean, we just learned about sort of the effects of it recently, the scope of it, but the breach had happened a while ago. So you have all these breaches of these companies that own a lot of user data and emails and passwords. And it seems like, and you brought this up, I think, in your Dropbox story, but one of the things that happened with Dropbox was, you know, somebody got a hold of passwords I think experts kind of pointed to LinkedIn and said, you know, LinkedIn got breached and they got passwords, and or they were able to crack the passwords. They're sort of weakly protected or whatever. And they used those passwords to, I think it was a Dropbox employee who had used the same password for their corporate account. So whatever attacker obtained that password was able to use it to log into Dropbox and get more passwords. And so you have this cascading effect of people, like all of these passwords, and who knows how many people have actually, you know, changed their passwords, if they even knew about the breach, because while this breach happened in 2014, Yahoo did not notify people of it until just now. That's, and there's every indication that they knew exactly, like that they've known at least for a little while, if not 2 years ago, that something was up, something was rotten in Denmark. And
yeah, there's a lot of fishy stuff going on here, because they're in the middle of getting bought.
Yep, by Verizon.
There's, you know, Mike's story is real good. He covers a lot of these bases about the, you know, some of the issues with, I should say stories, right? He's done
a couple. Michael Heller, senior reporter.
Yep.
Tech Target Search Security. We got to give him the full shout out.
That's right.
We got to get him on here one of these days.
We should. nevertheless, there's all this fishy stuff going on with, you know, it happened in 2014. When did Yahoo's, the people in charge of Yahoo, when did they find out about this? Aren't they supposed to tell us? Aren't there disclosure law, breach disclosure laws going on in California? If I remember correctly, that's an issue.
Yep.
There was some, there's some legal documents that were filed relating to their purchase, their acquisition by Verizon.
Yep.
Verizon, in which they stated under under their signatures, I don't want to say oath, but you know, serious stuff. They said they were not aware of any breaches. Is that
Recently. Yeah, very recently, so, like in the past couple of weeks, which raises questions. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to accuse Yahoo of definitely knowing, or Yahoo's management team, because there are times when things like this happen, and you know, I've heard about them. You've probably heard about them. You go to security conferences, and sometimes people in this profession will say, "Oh, I don't know. You heard about so and so, or this happened at this company, where something like a breach happened, and the people on the network admin or security team did not, like, they just kind of swept it under the rug, and they didn't tell management because they didn't want to look bad themselves." And we've heard, Peter, we've heard about things like this happening very recently at a major government agency like the FDIC. I mean, there was a systematic cover-up to not let any sort of higher-ups or oversight. I mean, I guess the CIO knew, the CIO was implicated in the cover-up, but you get my point. So how much the CEO, Marissa Mayer, or any of her top, you know, C-level lieutenants knew, you know, we don't definitely know that yet. But we should note that the New York Times did a story that really made Yahoo look bad, and possibly rightfully so. I mean, looking at all the anonymous sources and people on the inside and all the information that was presented in that story, it's a pretty compelling case. The headline was "Defending Against Hackers Took a Backseat at Yahoo, comma, Insiders Say." And the most relevant point, I think, of all was the fact that according to people that worked there or continue to work there, Alex Stamos, who's now is the chief security officer at Facebook, he was then the CSO at Yahoo. He declined to comment for the story, but during his tenure, the story says, Marissa Mayer rejected some of the most basic security measures of all. I'm reading from the story. An automatic reset of all user passwords, a step security experts consider a standard after a breach. And according to the story, employees said that move was rejected by the management team because they saw it as, you know, a bad sign for the company. And if users saw this, they would say, well, I'm done with Yahoo Mail and move off the platform. And they already were dealing with competition from Gmail and others. So, I mean, let me ask you, you've been doing this a long time. Password reset seemed to be pretty basic. It's something that we take sort of for granted from other breaches. Like, I know when I got the Dropbox thing, like I just kind of expected that I was going to get a password reset notification, a forced password, you know, reset from the company. And we did.
But now, it's funny you raised Dropbox, because I got a message from them saying I got an email from them saying I needed to change my password. Okay, that's fine. But I'm pretty sure that since 2014, see, often I'll, I don't regularly change passwords necessarily on a schedule, but if I'm trying to access something from a new system and I've forgotten my password, which invariably happens because my little password tool is unavailable, I reset the password.
Yep.
And I'm pretty certain that since 2000, was it 12 or 14 for the Dropbox? In either case, I'm pretty sure that I reset my password in the last year, but I still got the message. So I'm not convinced that I hadn't changed my password, but I'm also not convinced that Dropbox was sending that message out to only the people that needed to change their passwords. I think they must have sent it out to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, password reset, it's much of my experience goes way back before Dropbox or LinkedIn or any other of these services where you called up the IT guy and mm-hmm. he reset your password from a mainframe terminal. But yeah, it's pretty basic. You know, if your password file is under suspicion of being broken, you got to change your password for everybody.
Yeah, that's true.
And it, you know, that's just how it is. And of course, people are still using 123456.
Yeah, I mean, it seems silly to kind of force users to protect themselves. But again, you're talking about users, by and large, that are consumers that don't know any better. And if you're a company like Yahoo, it seems like a basic step. And it's, again, going back to the New York Times story, this is something that Alex Stamos really tried to push, according to the story, within the company, and was just sort of repeatedly dismissed. And it's funny, I guess his team, according to the story, the security team was known as the Paranoids, because they were always saying things like, this is going to happen, something bad's going to happen, and sure enough, yeah, something bad did happen. And it's not just sort of questions with the Yahoo breach about what they knew and when did they know it and why weren't people notified. Why are we just hearing about this now? Like, even if you knew a couple months ago, potentially from serving data or activity on the dark web, and I should note that we have a great piece online this week from one of our contributors, Matt Piscucci, who talked about the importance of exactly that, getting some type of consistent monitoring of the dark web, the deep web, to look for activity, to look for signs that maybe your, you know, corporate information is being traded, is being sold, is being trafficked. And that's how this matter sort of came to light for us. We still don't know whether Yahoo, again, what they knew and when did they really know it.
And just that phrase there tells me that, as always, the biggest problem that you're going to have from these kinds of things is not the actual event, but the cover-up. If you cover it up, that's bad. If you stand up and say this happened, you know, if Yahoo had come out as soon as they knew and made it clear, it would have given them some trouble, but not the kind of trouble that they're facing now, because it looks like possibly they might have broken some laws.
Potentially, I mean, there's going to be investigations. Mike wrote about that in his story. Mm-hmm. I will say this though, I think that question, what's going to be worse, might be a matter of debate in this one, because, and let's go back to our own story that looked at some of the other things. So there was the password, and you know, password reset that wasn't done, or that they didn't do. But there were other things going on, and Mike wrote about this in his story with, there was research from security company Venafi. They found that 27% of the certificates on external Yahoo websites have not been reissued since 2015, January of 2015. So we're going on almost 2 years. And only 2.5% of the 519 certificates deployed have been issued within the last 90 days. And there are other experts quoted in the story saying, you know, many of these Yahoo certificates used insecure MD5 and SHA-1 algorithms. And I mean, this is sort of like, we know this because we talk about it and we write stories, but you would assume that somebody of the reputation and the ability of an Alex Stamos, who is very well respected, knew this too. And for whatever reason, these things were not done. And again, going back to the New York Times story, one of the themes in that was that they didn't have a lot of funding, they didn't have a lot of resources, they couldn't get stuff done, and it seemed like this came back to bite them, because, I mean, they're like, I know you read my story, there's some some pretty damning quotes in this one. I mean, there's one from a systems engineer at Core Security, cybersecurity firm, Bobby Kuzma, who said that the fact that he said it was unconscionable, quote unquote, that Yahoo hasn't revoked and reissued every certificate in the organization since the breach. And he said it bordered on, quote unquote, criminal negligence. I mean, that's, and he makes a good case. He says, you know, quote, if attackers compromise the private keys stored on the server, and there's no, Peter, there is no reason to believe that they have not. I mean, nothing that a Yahoo has told us at this point would suggest that they, right?
I'll agree.
Yeah. if attackers compromise the private keys stored on the servers, they could easily perform man-in-the-middle attacks masquerading as legitimate Yahoo servers. If the allegations that Yahoo knew about this breach more than a year ago are true, the company will be in hot water. That's information that Verizon should have had during its process of purchasing Yahoo, and I expect that the SEC will have something to say about the matter. That's the end quote. That's bad.
Right, right. I mean, if as soon as they found out about it, they issued an announcement the next day saying, you know what, we really kind of screwed up.
Right.
And here are all the things that we did, and here are all the things that you have to do. I guarantee you the backlash against Yahoo would not nearly be as severe. But they held on to it. They tried to manage it. They tried to, you know, as we conjectured, because we always recklessly speculate here, if we can, if it's interesting.
Yeah.
You know, the news didn't come out till Friday. If the anonymous sources hadn't been shooting their mouths off on Thursday or Wednesday night, we might not have heard about it until late, you know, like let's say 5 p.m. Eastern time.
May not have heard about it at all until after the Verizon deal closed. I mean,
oh yeah, that's right.
I mean, this brings up an interesting question. Do you think Verizon's people knew? They must have had some indication, right? Like, they can't keep all of this from that company. I mean, they're acquiring them.
Well, yeah, that's a really good question. That's an interesting question. And you know, one of the beauties
of... Let's call Verizon.
Yeah.
Call them right now.
Right. Let's
get them on the podcast. No, yes. But...
I mean, this is part of the reason I love working here so much, is that so many of these stories... if we were covering networking, for example, we'd be talking about BGP, and
hey, Border Gateway Protocol is you know, some people find it sexy.
Hey, I'm not saying it's not.
Okay.
But the point is that we would be talking about these things, pretty hairy technical things, as we often talk about here in Search Security, in the Risk and Repeat podcast.
Yep.
But you know, a story about BGP or domain registries or those kinds of things don't generally turn into movie plots. And here's another one of these instances where, you know, I could see a couple years down the road when all the dust clears, somebody could turn this into a movie, depending on what the outcome is. If it's exciting, if the turns of events turn out propitious or anti-propitiously for Yahoo, it could certainly be a movie. Same as so many other stories that we cover in terms of you know, some of the dirty down and the down and dirty details that we get.
Yep.
We can conjecture all we want, but yeah, it's not looking good for Yahoo, and we haven't Verizon. Right. Has Verizon made any comments?
Doesn't look like it. It looks like they're probably... I mean, look, if I'm Verizon right now and I didn't know about it, if I'm the legal team, I'm sitting down, I'm reviewing every document. I'm looking at, you know, every public statement, every quarterly report that they've issued, any type of internal documents that may have suggested that this happened. I'm looking at, if I'm the security, I mean, think about the poor folks at Verizon security team, right? I mean, this is the company that puts out the Verizon Data Breach Investigations Report every year. And I mean, they themselves have had issues. I mean, they've been attacked. They've had incidents. Not to this level. Not anywhere near to this level that we know of. But now you're acquiring this company. And, like, I mean, you've got a pretty big investigation on your own hands now. So you've got to go in. You've got to look at Yahoo. You have to look at, the cryptographic keys, the certificates. You've got to look at everything, every potentially cut corner, every unpatched system, every piece of software that is updated, every database that may have usernames, passwords, stuff that's just security questions that are unencrypted. You've got to wipe all of it. You've got to scan it, sweep it, wipe it if it needs to be wiped, put it all in one place. I mean, this is bad. And I hate saying this, but I get the feeling that with situations like this, you look at LinkedIn, you look at Yahoo, we're not paying customers. I mean, I know there's premium memberships for LinkedIn, but, and I think that this may be a case where the company, because we weren't paying customers, they just didn't take it as seriously as it probably needed to be taken.
Well, now, going back to something that was a topic of conversation around the office of a couple months ago, Dan Lyons wrote a book about his experiences with a startup.
Yes.
And one of the things that struck me in that book, one of the many things that struck me in that book, was that he portrayed startups as being basically one disaster away, or one minor disaster away from catastrophe. At all times, because you're looking to grow your business as fast as possible, to get big numbers coming in and little numbers going out as far as your expenses, or, you know, bring in a lot of users, bring in as many users as possible, and keep growing that number, and this sort of spit and baling wire kind of approach to fixing things that he described makes me think twice before I use anything
exactly
from a vendor or a provider or an application or an app or whatever that is a quote unquote startup, because they're clearly, the number one priority is not security.
No,
it's not even in the, I'll bet it's not even in the top 10 for a lot of these.
That's probably true.
But yeah, I mean,
but why go after little fish when you can go after a big fish like Yahoo, get 500 million at least?
Again, you know, the fact that they were not bringing their stuff up to date, they were running deprecated algorithms like SHA-1. All of those things point to me to say, well, somebody might have stood up and said, look, it's going to cost us some number of dollars to fix this. Yeah. And we should, because it's deprecated and we have to be protecting our users. And and I can totally imagine the response being, well, you know what? It's working for now, and it costs a lot of money that we don't have, and we're in the process of selling ourselves to a deep-pocketed bigger company, so let them deal with it.
Yeah.
Again, pure speculation on my part.
Yeah, yeah.
I have no reason to believe that's the case, but I also have no reason to believe it's not.
Yeah, I'm sure this is going to be going on for, like we said, it's a very fluid situation, new updates happening all the time. Probably more stuff will trickle out over the weekend, and I don't think this is one of those stories that's not going to go anywhere. It may be on the level of, depending on the details and the specifics of the breach and everything involved, it could be one of those target things that really, you know, and in any event, I think we know why Alex Stamos left the company. We should turn to...
Yeah, did anything else happen this week?
Yeah, a lot happened. We should turn to the DDoS attacks. The historic, unprecedented, record-setting DDoS attacks that we briefly talked about in last week's episode, and just kind of give a quick update on that, because, well, we learned some interesting things about what's going on with those attacks. Again, to recap, some major DDoS attacks hit Brian Krebs' website, InfoSec reporter Brian Krebs, his site Krebs on Security, was hit with a major DDoS attack, so big that it was over 600.
Initial reports said 665 gigabits, and later on they revised it to 620, which is still, one of the biggest DDoSs ever.
Yeah, yeah. And if you, so he was hit at forced Akamai to kick him off their CDN anti DDoS network because they just couldn't. I mean, he's not a paying customer. They were doing it pro bono. This has been sort of covered quite a bit, but it's worth noting. They provided the service to him pro bono. And they said, you know, we can't do this. I can't keep you on the network because it's affecting other customers. So they cut him loose. He moved over to Project Shield. His site was restored.
Project Shield is
Google's Project Shield
for journalists to avoid censorship.
I mean, yeah, it's a great thing that they're doing. The site, since me being moved over, was restored. It's not. There have been periods over the last week where it has temporarily gone offline. So it looks like the attacks are still continuing. Other places were hit. Blizzard Entertainment, maker of the World of Warcraft, hugely popular World of Warcraft game, Overwatch, others, Diablo, frequent target of DDoS attacks. They were hit, although they don't know if it was the same threat actors. Another company, OVH, big web hosting firm over in Europe, was hit with an even bigger DDoS attack that was...
It was sourced from 152,000 or so webcams.
Webcams. I think routers. So it turns out that according to Krebs, according to OVH, their own security people, and according to a report by Symantec, a very timely report, that the culprit behind these, it wasn't a reflection attack, it wasn't, you know, any type of DNS attack, DDoS related attack. They were using, whoever was doing this was using IoT or connected devices to generate a botnet to slam these sites and these companies with traffic. And yeah, 150,000 webcams, DVRs, routers, all sort of infected with this IoT malware. And Symantec, they identified about a dozen different types of IoT malware in the report. Yeah. So what do you do? I mean, you're the networking guy. You tell me, what do we do about these dumb devices? What do I do about my DVR? You know? I mean, my DVR is slamming Krebs. I mean,
I was reading about some of this stuff about some of the routers that, you know, the consumer level routers that are popular are also popular among the malware writers. And how do you, you know, it's not, first of all, you got to assume, you got to hope that your vendor is going to post bug patches.
Firmware updates, but they don't, let's be honest.
And even
you hope that they do, but they don't. So now what?
Well, yeah, now, well, you can buy something else. Something newer that hasn't been...
Vigilante malware? I mean, that is what those guys were doing, you know, if you recall.
Last year?
Yeah, or was it earlier this year? The group that created it, I mean, they call it malware, but, you know, it wasn't really malware. It was sort of designed to protect wireless routers from exactly this type of thing. Right?
Right. Okay, I think I found the piece. It was from last October.
Oh, was that long ago?
Well, this is when
I was... Oh, it was, yeah, Team White. Yeah,
yes,
you're right. Team White.
White Hat Security Vigilantism. We had like router malware, maybe White Hat Security Vigilantism. Well, the problem with that is that you don't know if they change their mind that they're going to put a different color hat on. Or maybe somebody figured out a way to break their... To subvert their software.
Yeah.
So
now that it's freely available on all these routers, somebody could say, let's reverse engineer it. Let's use it for nefarious purposes. I get it. I just don't know what you do about any of this. Like, I can't get into my DVR and, you know, run an anti-malware program. I can't get into my wireless router and, you know, force a firmware update. I suppose you could, but...
You can try.
I mean, but this is really bad. I mean, people have been screaming about sort of the poor or complete lack of protections on these devices. And they're not smart devices. I hate when they're called smart devices. They're dumb devices. They're dumb. And when you get dumb devices like this and have no protection, this is what you get. You get IoT malware and IoT botnets and, you know, 1 terabyte of DDoS attacks, you know, hitting these major companies and these websites.
Well, yeah, I don't, to be honest, for example, I've got a little plug wart, wall wart, kind of a, it's an oversized plug. You put it into an outlet near your router so that you can amplify the router signal. And it's, you know, it's a little IoT thing.
Sure.
And I got it because my router's down in the basement and on the second floor, sometimes I don't get it all the way.
Yep.
So I put it in, but does it work? Is it still working for me or is it working for somebody else? Now, I don't know.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes I wonder, well, maybe I should go back to an older computer that doesn't have as much, you know, like an old VAX or something.
Sure. Well, I don't know that we need to go that far. No. I don't know that we need to, given the small number of devices that have been compromised, it's most likely that you and I are not part of the botnet army that is taking down UVH and or OVH and Krebs. But I will say this, if it just takes that, like I can probably count a dozen different devices like that in my house, or close to.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
A lot of routers, a lot of PCs, a lot of DVRs, a lot of cameras and internet connected things. Mm. And if it just takes 150,000 of those, like think about how many maybe in the common household now. My Xbox, my PS3, my PS4, PS2. I think I may have the original PlayStation. I mean, it's not internet connected, but you know what I'm saying?
I do.
So, I don't know. If it takes that sort of comparatively small to the big picture of connected devices that exist now, comparatively small amount to launch a devastating attack that even Akamai can't handle, that's bad news.
That is bad news.
And I'm sorry to end on a sour note, but I mean, that is bad news. So we are going to be keeping an eye on sort of the developing stories, developing angles on these attacks. What can companies like Akamai and Prolexic do to further mitigate them? What are companies like Symantec and others doing to fix this, you know, to prevent this IoT malware, these IoT malware families from spreading? So look for that. But in the meantime, yeah. Not good. So, well, Peter, I mean, we didn't get nuclear in this discussion, but, you know, Chernobyl was kept pretty cool.
Yeah, we got pretty conventional, though.
Yeah, but I feel like we had a good discussion.
Yes, we did.
So,
as always,
I appreciate you taking time on this Friday to sit down and chat with me, as usual, and looking forward to the next conversation with you.
As am I.
And as usual, I am Rob Wright, editor of Search Security. Thank you for listening to this edition of the Risk and Repeat podcast. We will see you next time.